Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively getting ready for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Friday. We return to Fadley's. I think it's our final appearance at Fadley's for the summer because we're going to move to the Fishmonger's Daughter over in Catonsville with our friends in the Divine family. And Damie will be with us as well. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have the Maryland Treasures scratch-offs to give away on Friday. I'm putting the Crab Cake Tour together again and again and again. Next week, Luke's out. I'm in. I'll be at the All-Star Game in Philadelphia, ringing the Liberty Bell. You know, I'm so disappointed that in 1976, I didn't get one of those pictures with the little Liberty Bell when I was a little boy, like all my friends did. I don't know. I must have skipped school that day. But 50th anniversary of that and the 250th anniversary of our country. And we're going to watch baseball this week. We're going to wrap ourselves in red, white, and blue and watch a little World Cup. There's a rumor that Luke Jones is even up late watching Mexico. And our friends over in the United Kingdom and England, battle there on the pitch, a man down. You want to talk soccer or baseball? I'd never ask if you wanted to talk soccer with me, Luke. You want to?
It's funny. I have nothing insightful to offer. I don't understand the game. I really don't know what I'm looking at. I mean, I watched soccer before in my life, but I've really enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed it. I mean, it's been a lot of fun. I said this to you at the beginning of the tournament that there's a curiosity at the very least that I have about it. And obviously the United States, so much excitement there, controversy now, but it's been a lot of fun. I'm
There
not
could
going to
be
sit
no
here.
corruption. I mean, Trump's involved, FIFA's involved.
Oh,
No
right, of
way there's
course.
any corruption involved in this at
But it's
all.
just, been a lot of fun, and you've seen some really, I've mentioned to you Cape Verde earlier on, and you see what kind of run they had. Of course, they didn't make it through, but I mean, you've had some underdog stories, you've had some disappointment. I mean, like Brazil, like right? I mean, you see what Brazil has not done
You've
in
heard
recent
my
World Cups.
Messina story about Norway, right? I told that one to Raskin. Do you know this one?
I
It's a
don't think I
baseball
do.
story, and it involves Norway. So maybe today is the day to tell you. If you don't know it, that means others don't know it either. This will be a baseball segment, I promise you. Back when I was a younger man, 32 years ago in the summer of 1994, before the baseball strike, keep in mind, I went on the air in December of 91, 35 years coming up. 92, the baseball park opened. 93, we had the exhibition football games going on. Like all of that was happening at that time. Angelos was buying, the All-Star game happened. So by 94, Mike Messina and I were very close, and his brother and I are still close all these years later. And we would go out drinking after Oriole games, not on nights when Moose pitched, yes, never on a night before he pitched, right? Like that was an idea to not go out, obviously, right? But he was a starting pitcher, so he had a couple days to burn. And me and him and Segui, sometimes Jack Voigt in that era, sometimes Brady Anderson in that era, we'd gather at Hooters. Sutcliffe came with us a couple of, but so we would go down to Hooters and we'd have a couple beers after the game. So this started in 92, 93. 94. All right. So we're coming up on the strike. It is right now. It's this time of the year in 1994. Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? About a work stoppage. Now, this is a baseball segment and not a soccer segment for you, Luke. But Messina and I are on the outdoor deck at Hooters in the back of the old Hooters behind like the Cap City Brewing or whatever that was at the time. And we heard a roar, like a rumble at 1 o'clock in the morning. It was really late. This was not 11:30. I mean, the games were at 7:35 then and 3 hours long. This was after 1 a.m. The bar was empty. I mean, there were some Hooters girls. They were cleaning up. There's 20 of us. We're drinking some beers, some Molsons. Quiet, quiet. Inner Harbor, July night, 90 degrees, really hot, like it's been this week. And we heard a roar, like a rumble, like noise, like people marching. The hell is this? I looked out onto the promenade up northbound toward up from the harbor, and they were marching from hotels down the walkway. 300, 400 people chanting, chanting, painted up, war paint. They were going to the Norway match the next day in DC and camping in Baltimore. So this could make a lot of sense to you right now, given what you've seen Norway rowing and Times Square and Philadelphia getting taken over by Paraguay the other day. And like, my wife and I were going to go up if the Germans had won to Philadelphia. We haven't participated in this World Cup because I did it in 06 and I've shared videos and blah, 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 blah. But in 1994, whatever you know about soccer, I knew less in 1994. I promise you. The blast, yes. I didn't know there was such. I mean, did I know Maradona existed yet? Did I know John Eisenberg went to Mexico? John Eisenberg was at the hands of God game. John Eisenberg covered that game for the Baltimore Sun in 1986. He was at the Maradona game. So next time he's on, John, coming to get you. So there's soccer involved and intertwines every 4 years, right? But it's been in this country one time 32 years ago. And these 400 Norwegians came down. They plopped down and they took over the bar. Like the bar came to life. And Messina's sitting in the middle and they don't know who he is. I mean, at all. We're just like hanging. And we were so entertained by them. And they were the Norwegian fans. They were playing a game in DC the next day. They played three games, I think, in DC back in 94. There were three or four matches. Saudi Arabia, there were a couple countries that played in DC that sort of based around Baltimore at the time. RFK Stadium wasn't much. And we met the Norway fans. And that's my only World Cup entree from 1994 where I even knew, and I was on the radio every day. Like there weren't people watching it or call like Brazil want whatever. I mean, no, believe me, man. Like it's come a long, 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 long way to get your attention, even for a night for the USA. And which brings us to baseball and saying, I sat up on Sunday night and my wife looked at me. She's like, my God, like you got your glasses on. You're like watching the game. Like, I haven't seen you watch a game in a while. Like, really, like, sit. I didn't watch the Orioles that way. I don't sit up and because soccer, the ball's moving, right? Baseball's more like, get stuff done, passive, rewind, stop. What did Palmer say? What did Ben McDonald say? Baseball, it's got to keep our attention here. And I tell you what, over the weekend, nobody wanted to come to the game in Cincinnati on Sunday either. The cowboy hats with the C on it that Ben McDonald wanted so bad. I mean, I watched over the weekend. I want them to come back to life, and this is a baseball segment, but my God, we're all watching soccer. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, look. Yeah, I mean, just to put a bow on the World Cup talk, at least for the moment. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I know who Harry Kane is, right? But Erling Haaland for Norway. I mean, that's been amazing. I mean, he scores goals, right? I mean, like, it's incredible. So it's been fun. I mean,
You
it's
see
neat.
the allure of it, being a football fan
Sure,
and a baseball fan.
sure.
Like, that's the thing about soccer, even in
Of course.
1994. Messina and I are like, y'all are all painted up for your country, like, whatever. You kick a little ball and goal and fake like you're hurt and like, whatever those thoughts would
Yeah.
be until you really understand soccer. And I fell in love with it in 98 when the World Cup team came to my studio. I've put all the videos up of Steve Sampson kissing me and Preki and Tab Ramos, who was making Snickers commercials then, and they went to France and they laid a turd and like on and on and on and on. 98, 2002, and 6, and the legend of going to South Korea and being this far into it. I soccer's exciting in that way, and baseball can be exciting in that way, but like we're in this pivot point for this baseball team where it's just sort of like. Even when they're winning a couple of games, I mean, and Bradish pitched great on Sunday.
Yeah, I think for me, obviously they win a series, right? They won two out of three, great. But the time for that, where you're satisfied with winning two out of three, and let's face it, the Reds are the opposite of the Phillies, right? The Phillies were terrible in April, fired their manager, and they played, I believe it's right around 667 ball since Don Mattingly took over for Rob Thompson. Whereas the Reds played really good baseball through the month of April, and they've been the worst team in baseball since May 1st. So, yeah, you should win two out of three at a minimum, but this team needs more than that at this point. Like they need to go on a run, and I'm not saying it needs to be 15 in a row, but they're already at a point now where no matter what happens on this homestand, they're under 500 at the All-Star break, right? I mean, they're 7 games under 500 after winning two of three. For me, the time for saying winning two out of three and just being the tortoise, slow and steady. That was about 5 or 6 weeks ago. And guess what happened? They had that run where they went 10-4. And then guess what happened? Let me read off the series results since then. Loss, split, loss, loss, win. Series win at Dodger Stadium there. Loss, 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 win. I mean, they had their opportunity to do this slow and steady, win two out of three, win two out of three, win two out of three, and they didn't do it. So now you're at a point where, again, I'm not saying it has to be a 12-game winning streak, but I need to see more than two out of three against the lousy Cincinnati Reds.
Well,
And
for the
especially
most part, they're getting pitching that could support that.
the pitching has,
That could support that.
have you seen what their starting rotation numbers are since May 20th? I mean, they've been one of the better rotations in baseball since then. Now, we can sit here and debate whether that's going to continue. And no, it's not really a group that strikes out a ton of people. And we can poke holes in that. But the point is, it's been more than good enough. If you think about how this team was designed, intended to play back in the offseason, they're starting pitching, even with the injuries that they've endured, which Zach Eflin threw, what, three innings all year. Dean Kramer's barely pitched. Chris Bassitt hasn't been very good, even when he has been on the hill. So Trevor Rogers had his stretch there where he was sick and very, very ineffective. But overall, the starting pitching, if you kind of told me back in mid-May where it would be going on, a month and a half, almost 2 months later, I would take that. But it's been everything else, right? The offense, maddening at best, inconsistent at best, right? I mean, the overall numbers, when you look at them in their totality, they're not horrendous. I'm not saying it's a terrible offense, but this was built to be the offense being the heavy lifter, right? The group that's going to do the most for you. And Sunday was a perfect example of that. You said it. Kyle Bradish pitched well. It wasn't his most dominant effort of the year. I mean, it wasn't a ton of swing and miss but I mean, he pitched into the eighth inning. He had a chance to finish eight innings. I mean, we can debate Craig Albernaz leaving him in the game
Yeah, I
there,
was going to
but
say, I mean,
but even
emotionally, I'm all in. Albernaz came in, looked him in the eye, like the whole deal.
But even so, even with that, he gave up 3 runs in 7 2/3 innings,
By the
right?
way,
I
you didn't
mean,
even ask how I got Peacock TV, where I stole it. You didn't even ask. You didn't even. I watched the game on. See, I just proved to you I watched the game on Sunday,
how did
right?
you get it?
Stole it.
Barry? Barry?
No,
Oh, okay.
no, no,
Oh, okay.
no. He's too much cheapskate. No,
Oh, okay.
no. Someone passed along the
Okay.
poi. They passed along the Peacock for an afternoon. So I peacocked with Ben McDonald and the other guy. It was a decent. I mean, it was a decent reading of the game, I thought. It was a little bit of a lonely game, but
I thought the
fast
broadcast was
game.
pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought
Ben McDonald's great, by the
I'm
way.
not.
I don't say it enough, and I
He
praise
does a
him.
really good job. Yeah.
Ben McDonald's really, really, really good at this, and they are blessed to have him. And I've known Ben since we were both puppies. I mean, 35 years ago, I met Ben McDonald when he was the rising star and the 1-1 and a big deal. And he was always the best guy. Like, so I've, you know, like I would just say that from the minute I met him because he was a big star in this town or was budding to be the Jackson Holiday or the whatever all that is. But all these years later, the fact that he's here with this all shucks, Brooks Robinson, Louisiana, Coondog thing going, I don't even know, but it's amazing. And he's great. And they better hug him up, especially as Palmer hits the exit. And because he makes 3 hours of my night better being with him. And I know him. So I feel like I know him and I do. And he's very familiar to me. But boy, is he good.
Yeah, I mean, you just took the words right out of my mouth in terms of you better hold on to him, because I mean, Jim Palmer's not going to be doing this much longer. I mean, it's not a bold proclamation. I mean, Jim's in his early 80s at this point, but.
I think McDonald's great for kids. He teaches the game,
Oh,
he
how about
explains things. He's great. He's great.
here was a very simple thing from Sunday's broadcast, and we've heard this is nothing new for Orioles fans because we've heard him explain this before. But he was talking about Kyle Bradish, what makes The fact that he has such a crazy spin rate on his breaking balls, he told you why that's important, right? We have so much StatCast data at this point in time. And I'll be the first to admit, I'm probably guilty from time to time when I use certain terminology or a certain statistic and I don't explain it, right? And that's on me if that's the case. But the point is, Ben McDonald went on to explain. He said, okay, Kyle Bradish has this crazy high spin rate on his breaking ball, you know, his slider and his curve. And he told you why that's so effective, because that kind of spin, when it's that sharp a spin, a hitter thinks it's going to be a fastball. So early on, especially that first time through the order, you saw how many Reds hitters were, you know, check swing, going too far, not able to lay off those breaking balls in the dirt. Well, out of hand, it looks like it's going to be a fastball at the knees because of that spin rate. So Ben, explain that to the audience, whether we're talking about Orioles or Reds fans or anyone else that was just taking a peek at that game. So that's what you want,
You
though,
gotta
right?
learn baseball when you're watching it,
And you have
otherwise
to
you're
learn it,
lost.
especially in this day and age, right? And I don't say this to be a commentary, good, bad, or indifferent about analytics and modern front
They did
offices and
some
modern
stat the
coaching,
other day about
but it's
swinging over and under the ball, and I'm like, I mean, that's cute. I mean, it's like the gamblers telling me that Dallas and the Redskins are 42-28. Oh, what is that? That means nothing.
right.
You
But
know, some of this information doesn't mean
oh,
anything, you know?
it can absolutely be information overload, but there is plenty that can be really helpful and really interesting, right? And that's something that the best commentators out there or the best writers out there can explain that to an audience that needs to have an open mind, right? I mean, I
It's
can sit
called
here.
color commentary, so you're
Yeah.
adding color.
So your audience needs to have an open mind about it to some degree, but if they do, can you explain it in a way that makes it make sense, right? And I
Baseball
think,
bunch, man. I go back to that, to kids and to young
and this,
people, and not just
but the
young
same thing.
people, to my Swedish girlfriend that I took to a game 30 years ago. Didn't under if like if you want to recruit people to baseball, the television show is the show.
Sure.
It really is. And I keep,
It's
and it's not lost on me
the
that
main
what
thing.
Mark Fine and Katie Griggs and Don Hrovac and Rubenstein and these creeps of the new set of creeps have done, the new losing baseball creeps have done in throwing me out, is it's a television show now that we pay $20 a month for, and it's pass or fail, it's up or down. I turn it, Ian Dark's more interesting. I put the soccer game on. I mean, like, this isn't rocket science, but staying with it is a part of understanding it.
Sure.
And having a reason to be engaged, whether it's you love the Orioles, you love Gunnar Henderson, you love the game, you want to learn something about the game, you want to fly, you're betting on it. My God, they hope you bet on it. That's all they really care about you
Yeah.
do is bet on it.
In any
So,
sport, yeah.
right, exactly, which is why me sitting up watching a soccer match that's completely corrupt in the middle of the night and a completely corrupt in Mexico, you know, like I'm up watching it because I love sports, but the way it's presented is so important. And with the Orioles going nighty night and the team not being great, the broadcasts matter, and the recruitment of what's left of the fan base is really important.
Yeah, sure. And really, just to finish the thought on, you know, when you're talking about someone like a Ben McDonald or a Jim Palmer, I mean, you want that in any sport, right? I mean, the best analyst in the for the NFL or college football can break down what they're seeing in a way that someone who might not understand it as well as them can grasp the concept, right? I mean, you know, they're football's a very complicated game. I mean, all these sports, when you get into the weeds, can be very
Can you
complicated.
imagine being a 30-year-old person in Germany trying to learn the American football game? Like,
Yes,
baseball befuddles people. Baseball.
because it would be, it's like me trying to learn soccer at
But
this point in my
soccer
life.
is the ball, offsides, onsides,
Sure.
11 on 10, like, whatever.
Sure.
Like, you could learn soccer a lot quicker than one of these blokes coming over here watching England to learn baseball. Like, baseball, like, which way do we run? Which way do we
Yeah.
hit? What's an out? What's a ball? What's a hit? Like, what's a run? Like, all of these definitions for baseball that are a part of like our DNA being from Baltimore and growing up around Earl Weaver and your dad and my dad and our culture here for baseball. But baseball's as complicated as any of this stuff. And I think it also can be, don't tell anyone. I know you don't, it can be boring. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Well,
But like for people who don't get it, See, you're going to fight back because that's what
No,
baseball people do.
no,
But
no,
that's
I
fine.
was
But
just
the
in.
stadium's getting more empty every day, and they're trying to get it more full. And I'm thinking Ben McDonald and whatever their television broadcasts are. And this is memo to Greg Bader in the middle of this soccer thing. TV broadcasts are all they got. And I guess that's my point of like when I'm home and it's 115 degrees, and I can either watch Ian Darke in Argentina or I can watch a bad broadcast, and no offense to, any of the B teams of Masson or anyone else, but like a good broadcast and it supports whatever the sporting event would be in a way that gets a nonchalant person involved to become involved. Like the Orioles have the Orioles people. You and me, everybody that watches this thing every day,
Right.
they're the same. Like, we're in. Now, like, I'll get all of that, but like, when it's not very good, the broadcast is the only glue that's going to hold the thing together. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, but I think that applies elsewhere. I mean, okay, if we're not talking World Cup aside, right? I mean, that's the extreme. You can find plenty of examples of soccer matches that aren't the most exciting, right? So, like, especially if you don't understand it, like someone like me, if it's nil, if it's nil nil, and it's that might not be the most exciting. But instead, in a world on a World Cup stage, you had a stretch of what was that, 60 seconds, where three goals are scored between England and Mexico. I mean, when something like that happens, when you have a 10-9 baseball game, hey, that's exciting in that sense, right?
But
But
when it's 104 degrees in Cincinnati and there's 8,000 people scattered in the stadium and
well, it's just,
Bradish, it's just when you put it on, the energy of it, just
yeah.
the energy of it in your living room and sound around or whatever, you have to really engage yourself with this baseball team, which you and I do on a daily basis. My kid came over here in the middle of the game Sunday. I'm watching the game on a little flip top Peacock because this is what they're doing to me. My son's defecating all over, last name Aparicio, defecating all over baseball. I haven't watched a baseball game in years, and he's your age. And he's like, this is why I don't support them. Man, they're chasing you and your sister-in-law around, running around trying to get a password just so you can watch their game today
Sure.
on a 100-degree day. And Ian Darke's about to call a world-class game. Like, literally. And I'm not a golf guy or a NASCAR or all the other options that life's journey would provide for you. Watching them auction cars, which my wife likes, Bugsy Malone cars. So I like literally all the 57 channels that Bruce Springsteen wrote about, this baseball team needs to be more of everything to everybody in a lot of ways that they're not right now. And I guess in this World Cup thing where you and I began the thing with the World Cup, we'll go to bed with the World Cup. Karinci's coming on tomorrow. They're going to win. They're going to lose. They're going to move on. Whatever it is, we're at a point where the baseball team is going to an all-star game with one player, Rutschman. We haven't brought that up. I just did. It was my guess last week anyway. And they're coming home again, right? I mean, they're home and the weather's broken, right? Like the weather's going to be decent this week. Where are we? We going out to the ballpark to see the Mighty Cubbies and the Royals? What are we doing? I know you'll be with me on Friday at Fadley's, but where are we with this ball club? Because we're getting up on this trading deadline, buying and selling. And to your point, they're in quicksand. They're not in mud. They're in quicksand.
Yeah, I mean, it's what's funny is we're talking so much about the trade deadline here, and the idea of what Michael Elias said last homestand and how they responded there, and whereas you look around at the rest of baseball, first of all, who are the definitive sellers at this point in time? There aren't many, right? I mean, that's a pretty small list of, I mean, you would think the Angels, but who knows with them making changes in their front office and where they are right now. The Royals look like a definitive seller, right? Yeah, you have a couple teams in the National League. I'll hear all that, but by and large, I mean the Orioles are 7 games under 500. There are lots of teams looking at the Orioles right now and wondering, oh, are they going to sell? That doesn't mean they're going to trade Gunnar Henderson or even Adley Rutschman, but Taylor Ward,
Would you take a
Trevor
run at it?
Rogers.
Would you take a run at it if you are the Cubs? I'm making it
Well,
up. If you're a team, would you make a call to Elias and say, "What do I got to give you for Henderson to rent him for the next 2.5 years or what a year, whatever it is?" Rutschman, same thing. Like, if you want these guys, and the phone rings, Are you frozen? Don't take the call. Listen to it. Shop a little bit and then say no. Take it to David Rubens. Take it to Arrighetti because Arrighetti's running the team, dude. They're not dealing any of these guys. Arrighetti's paws are into this. I've heard this more and more in the last 2 weeks that Arrighetti thinks of this as his team and his future team, and these are his assets. Like, he's not running to the front to make a bobblehead or whatever, but these decisions about aircraft, I keep wanting to call it Battleship Galactica. I don't know these baseball terms you that the nerds use. Aircraft carrier, is that the word we're
That was
using?
actually that's actually more of a long time GM and scout thing.
Right.
I
That's a
think Dan
baseball
O'Dowd
network.
was the first guy I
It's a
heard
baseball network
use
term,
that.
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Aircraft carriers. We went through this with Machado, and you and I did the ancient history. I had to look up who used Neal Diaz. I had to remember his name. But and while Kramer's, okay, right? I mean, you got something out of it. But these assets, and we did a whole hour on this the other day. Go listen to it. This is a constitutional crisis, to borrow a 250-year term, for Arrighetti and Rubinstein. And I don't even want to hear about Katie Griggs or Elias or Albernaz, or I don't even want to hear about the players because they're all expendable. What are these guys doing? Who's running this joint? What are they doing? They're home all week. What are they doing?
I mean, in a big picture sense, your guess is as good as mine,
I
but
think this time next week they'll have an all-star game in 2030. Katie will come back from Philadelphia next week,
yeah.
like the constitutional. I'll be up there. She'll ignore me. I'm like a fake media member with a real media pass. But like, they're going to come back this time at the end of next week. They're going to have an all-star game to announce here in 2030. That's really what's the most important thing that's on her mind right now, because she can't control whether Kyle Bradish is going to make. And by the way, so much for like controlling how many pitches and innings for him. I guess innings, but like it felt to me on Sunday afternoon like they were going to wear him out.
Well, I'll go back to what you just said in a moment, but yeah, it was funny. At one point during the broadcast, they brought up that very subject, and Ben McDonald made a comment saying somewhere, and I don't think Ben was privy to this. I think this was purely him speculating, and I'm not even saying this to be a knock on Ben or anything like that, but he made a comment. I think he said it was like, oh, he might pitch, somewhere in the neighborhood of 140, 145 innings, and I almost spit out my drink because I just wanted to say, Ben, he's at 100 innings now. I mean, if he's only going to throw 40 more innings this year, and I don't think Ben is privy to anything there. I think
Like
he
he
was
could throw
just
40 more innings by the end of the month.
right. And
Like
well, that,
literally.
and look, let's be clear. I've said this all along. These types of hard caps for innings limits and pitches and things of that nature, they're still. The evidence that supports it is still flimsy, right? I even said to you, for me, I would almost view it, you have to look at the micro within the macro, right? Like, for example,
I could bring
on,
Dr. Leo Mazzoni on here to make your argument, by the
but on Sunday, like the example would be within those 7 2/3 innings, how many pitches, how many innings would you consider high stress? Did he have an inning where he threw 35 pitches, for example, right? That's the kind of stuff you need to be looking at much more closely and definitively than just looking at the raw number of pitches, the raw number of innings. Now, that said, do I think Kyle Bradish is going to throw 190 innings this year? I'd be really, really surprised by that.
Well, he's going to pitch
So.
Saturday or Sunday. He's going to come back and pitch again against the Astros on the way out. He'll pitch again in Boston probably the day after you and I go, and then he's going to pitch again against the Tigers. I mean, there's five starts there. It's
Yeah.
at least 30 innings, right? I mean, he's going to throw
Yeah.
five. Like, so you by August 1st, he's going to be at a buck 40. To your point,
I mean,
like so.
I mean, somewhere he might not be at a buck 40, but he'll be
Dude, but you
somewhere
were
in
saying
that.
something like, well, they can skip a start and bag of it. They're not going to do, dude, they're trying to get into the pennant race. Like
Well,
they're trying, by July 31st, they got to figure out who the hell they are. And I think you and I know who they are at this point.
it's that
They're eight
August
games under
3rd.
.500 or whatever they are.
I mean, we're already, the trade deadline's August 3rd this
It's
year, but
August
it,
3rd. Okay,
yeah,
thank you. Thank you.
but we're still under a month, and I hear you. Is there an option for them to go to a six-man rotation at some point? I mean, they're going to have to do something, and I hear you loud and clear, but you can also do that and then you say, all right, well, what are we doing with Bradish over the final 2 months of the season, right? I mean, you would
Well, you're
think there
not
needs
taking
to
him
be.
out of turn during the All-Star break. He's going to pitch Saturday or Sunday. You take off, bring him back Friday or Saturday next, whatever.
See, I wouldn't do that, but I mean, to
You
me,
give him an extra day and a half? What are you going to give
I
him?
would try, I would slot him to the back of the rotation coming out of the
You want to
All-Star
give him
break.
11 days off or like that? Like literally, you
Oh,
want
I
to do
mean,
that?
you're
You want
gonna
to
throw.
skip him, kind of, sort of.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, unless we're just gonna say that the innings don't matter and you're just gonna let him go. I mean, okay. I mean, he's the one. I guess Boz too, just because he's under contract. But he's the one amazing asset you have as a pitcher right now. I mean, you've
You
got
say
some other guys.
assets, and I look down at these lottery tickets, and I see the horses, and I think of them as, it's Preakness week. It's Preakness week. Do we run the horse, or do we not run the horse? And
Sure.
it's 2 weeks off. Literally, it
Sure.
reminds me of that, dude. It's the same concept with these guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, so, and let me be
That's why I
clear. I
threw the
mean,
F-bomb out last week. Tell Wyckoff I sent him a script, by the way. I did put the F-bomb in. It was about effing pitchers, by the way. So it wasn't about like any. So when I dropped my F-bomb, it had to do with the disposability of the racehorses of the pitchers,
yeah,
literally.
well, I mean, but at the same time, you want to, we can call it disposable, being disposable when you're talking about average and run-of-the-mill arms,
Don't
but when
tell that
someone
to the
that's
Arizona Diamondbacks right now on their payroll.
sure, right? I mean that, yeah. How many Orioles fans wanted to re-sign Corbin Burns, right? The Orioles tried to re-sign Corbin Burns, and we see how that would have turned out, right? And I don't mean that
That's
to
why I
say.
called them effing pitchers.
That's why I've said you need to develop your own, because those are cheaper, controllable assets that you don't have to be in a position where you're signing someone that may not, you might pay millions and millions of dollars to, and they might not pitch for the better part of
And
2 years.
to quote Earl Weaver, literally the beginning of this conversation, other than all the World Cup stuff that we began, and my dear friend Billy Ronson, who made me think of him on Sunday night, the late great Billy Ronson. They're getting good enough pitching right now. Like, I mean, the effing pitching, to quote Earl
They
Weaver,
are.
is has been good enough, and that's hard. That's the hardest thing to do, kind of, sort of, and in the sport, keep it healthy, get it out there, get you six, seven innings, three, four of those guys that can do that 4 or 5 nights a week. They're on to that, but the thing's a mess.
I mean, it's just I'm going to pull it up right now because I alluded to this earlier, but since May 22nd, so we're talking, I mean, that's what, 6.5 going on 7 weeks at this point in time. Since May 22nd, their starter ERA is ninth in the majors right now. It would be fourth in the American League right now. Well, since May 22nd. I mean, that's, if you had told me that back then, that their starting rotation would be pitching like that, I would think at this point they were back over 500, and they're not. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they'd be leading the AL or leading the AL East. We know what kind of start they got off to, but that's the reality. That's why this is so frustrating. That's why I'm unmoved by taking two out of three from the lousy Cincinnati Reds. They, back on May 22nd, when they started that homestand, right? When we were talking about them in similar terms to last year, as far as that feeling like a very pivotal moment, as far as whether the season was just going to completely crash and burn, or whether they were going to get off the mat. They had that 7-3 homestand. They had a 10-4 stretch, all of that. But you go back to the beginning of that, they were 8 games under 500. Now they're 7 games under 500. So in 6.5 weeks or whatever it's been, they've made up one game just in terms of getting closer to 500.
And to quote Luke Jones, big whoop.
That's why taking two out of three from that's why taking two out of three from the Reds, I'm just okay. Like, it wasn't a bad weekend. Like, look, it was great to see Bisaio hit home runs Friday and Saturday. Why wasn't he in the lineup Sunday? Right? I mean, that was the other thing. I mean, Lodolo, you kind of look at him, he was a reverse split guy. Look, say what you want about him, and it is a little more complicated because you don't want him in the field, but Cobie Mayo needs to play against lefties. Go look at his splits. He m demolishes left-handed pitching. So I have no problem with that. But in terms of sitting the other lefties the way they did on Sunday in favor of guys who, I mean, Tyler O'Neill doesn't hit lefties anymore. Leody Taveras doesn't, okay, maybe he hits lefties a little better than Colton Cowser, But Colton Cowser's a way better defensive player. And we saw that Saturday night. That catch he made in the ninth inning was massive for them. So I don't know. I just see this blind devotion to the platoon advantage when then you look at the actual numbers and you say, is that really giving them an advantage there? Like, what are we doing here? It just adds up to it not being good enough, right? And that's the frustrating part here. Look, they're going to come home. Maybe they take two out of three from the Cubs, and you'll have a chance to we'll catch up on this because I'm not going to be around by the time the Royals series concludes. But they could take two out of three from the Cubs. You know, the Cubs, look at them. I mean, they're 10 games over 500, but look at their season. If that were a stock, you'd see lines that are up and down, up and down. I mean, look at their losing streaks and their winning streaks this year. My goodness, they are the definition of a high variance team in terms of they've looked like one of the best teams in baseball, and they've also had long losing streaks. But they could win two out of three, and guess what? I'd be just as likely to expect the Orioles to lose two out of three to the Royals then over the weekend, right? I mean, it's who they are. They're not very good. At some point in time, we're in July now. Could they make a run? Can they make a run? Yes, it's baseball, right? We've seen that. I mean, look at the Tigers a couple years ago. Look at what Cleveland did last year, right? I mean, we've seen that. I'm not going to sit here and say it's impossible. And one of the reasons why I would say is their starting rotation's doing a pretty darn good job over the last 6 weeks. But my goodness, you just look at the elements of this team and it's just not consistent enough. And Sunday was another example, right? This was their seventh attempt to win four in a row. Seventh, right? They've had seven different three-game winning streaks. And they're at a point now where, hey, let's sweep the Reds, who've been so lousy for 2 months now, come home, final homestand. You're not going to get to 500, but if you rattle off a 5-1 homestand on the heels of sweeping the Reds, man, you're feeling good about yourself at the All-Star break. Could they still have a 5-1 homestand? Sure. Could they? Yes. But every time you really start to buy into this team for some series win, take two or three from the Dodgers or do this or win three in a row, they just come crashing right back down to earth right after that. So that's why I look at this and I say, okay, you won two out of three from the Reds. The Reds are 20-37 since May 1st, worst team in baseball. So, I mean, they had a chance to sweep them, and they had their ace on the hill Sunday, and their ace
Pitching
pitched
like an
well.
ace, right?
He pitched well, right? I mean, even disagreeing with the Albernaz leaving him in there, it's still 3 runs over 7 2/3 innings. And Lodolo, the Reds lefty, he doesn't have great numbers this year. I mean, even after a good start against the Orioles, he's got a 4.68 ERA. They didn't go out. They didn't do what it took to win a game. And that's just it's the story of this team, right? It's not horrendous, but it's not good. It's not good enough. And it's where they are. And they still have time, but the way that I'm viewing this series win, and it being two out of three, it needed to be a sweep. It just did. And if that sounds unfair, well, they had 3 months for me to not be in a position where I'm sounding unfair talking about this team, right? Like you're at a point where you need to start really making a run and stubbing your toe in the final game against the Reds, a very winnable game on Sunday. That's the kind of thing that you can't afford to have happen at this point in the season.
I got a great letter from a listener in Canada. I'll start the next segment with that. Luke and I are going to talk some more baseball. We're going to talk Adley Rutschman. I am headed to the All-Star game in Philadelphia next week to sort of like look around and see what the All-Star game is. I've been going to All-Star games for 35 years on and off. Major League Baseball always credentials me. I expect to be there on Tuesday and running around and doing my job, the job that I've done on behalf of everyone here at WNSD for a lot of time. Luke's on vacay next week. We're going to gather on Friday at Fadley's. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at GBMC. Let's not forget Fernan and Dermer there. The comfort guys kept a lot of people comfortable last week. Luke, there's like rain in the forecast every day this week for this Cubs and Royals series, but it's going to be much more temperate in the 80s into the 70s at night. I don't know whether people are going to go to the ballpark or not. We will be at Fadley's on Friday having the Maryland Crab Cake Tour and giving away some Maryland Lottery scratchers. My last batch of these before we get going later on in the month. We're going back to all of our sponsors. It's going to be a big month around here. We're watching soccer, football. Football Americano by the end of the month. Luke's on vacation. He's going to eat pizza while Woody-O And I'm going to eat pizza Essex ex Essex at Pizza John's later in the month. I think we're there on the 24th. I got to get the date right for that with everybody over in Essex as well. So more baseball ahead, an All-Star game ahead. Luke and I have done a ton on the Ravens that you can find out at Baltimore Positive. And I'm this week I'm turning my lonely eyes toward the baseball All-Star game, as well as this emergence of soccer in the World Cup in America here this week, which has been, quite frankly, more fun than the baseball. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. More ahead. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.